Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Coming strong with another edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns 24/7. I am Jeff Howe. Before we get into this week's proceedings, wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we just thank you so much for being a part of another presentation of Longhorn Blitz. More than a decade and going strong with the podcast, and that would not be possible without you, the listener. Several different ways you can get this podcast. You can go to horns247.com, or the best way to get it is anywhere you get your podcasts. Search Horns 24/7. That's Horns 247. No dashes, slashes, or spaces. Click that follow button. Get every episode of The Blitz when it drops on Wednesdays. And if you'd be so kind, leave us a 5-star review. Yeah, if you heard the nails clicking, it's that time of the day. My dog Daisy. Daisy wants to be a part of the presentation, but I shot her down, so she has to go take a nap or whatever it is dogs do. On that note, let me bring in the rest of the team. He is the master of the soundboard, the driving sheet extraordinaire, our lead research analyst on Longhorn Blitz, and a daily fantasy guru. He is Matt Butler. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well, man. How about you?
Not too shabby. And the third member of our team, he wears many, many hats. But for the purposes of this podcast, he is our lockdown corner here on Longhorn Blitz. Lifetime Longhorn, 2002 UT All-American, 2002 semifinalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, fourth round draft choice of the New York Giants back in 2003, spent his NFL career with the Giants, Lions, Bears, Bucks, Broncos, and a year with the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the CFL. When he was done with football, he got himself back to Austin, Texas, and the 40 Acres, where he earned his degree. Whenever that T-ring comes back in, we will make sure he wears it proudly. Nevertheless, he's a card-carrying member of DBU, and when you get that All-American honor recognized by the NCAA, they make sure you get one of those black cards. Number 21 in your program, number one in your hearts, Mr. Rod Babers.
Thank you for the intro, brother. I appreciate it each and every time. Gets better and better.
I try to do my best with that. Rod, I want to start with you on this week's show because I feel like when we talk about Longhorns in the NFL, as far as free agents go and the free agency period, the window to negotiate and agree to deals has opened as we record this podcast. As a matter of fact, about a half hour before we started, Derrick Henry signed his or agreed to his deal with the Ravens. So there's another big move going on in NFL free agency. Right. As far as the Longhorns go, Devin Duvernay signs in Jacksonville. Jordan Hicks, his remarkable career continues, signing a 2-year deal with the Browns. But Rod, DBU is kind of running things from a free agency standpoint as far as the Longhorns go. PJ Locke re-signs in Denver. Brandon Jones signs a multi-year deal in Denver. Adrian Phillips is a free agent. Deshaun Elliott's a free agent. Quandre Diggs is a free agent. So it's an interesting time, Rod, to track some of your DBU brethren out there still trying to make a living playing this game.
Yeah, it's about, you know, three of those guys on the Denver Broncos, which is kind of crazy. I don't think that's ever happened, have three different members of the DBU Texas secondary on the same squad. And what I love about all those guys, you start looking at them, and you just named off a few of them. You know, the one common trait between them, I was talking to Quandre this past weekend, and one of the remarkable things about Quandre's career is that I don't know many DBs or many athletes, period, that played the sport of football that have played as many positions in their, right, in their respective position like Quandre. Quandre came in as a corner, moved to nickel, went to the NFL as a nickel. They played nickel in the NFL. They moved in the corner, and then he eventually moved to safety. where he probably had most of his splash plays, his really productive years in terms of being in Pro Bowl or in the NFL, probably came at safety. He says he enjoys nickel more than anything because nickel always puts you in the action. Sometimes at safety, you're kind of removed from the action a lot of the times, just trying to limit explosive plays. But I digress. The whole point is that he's a really versatile defender. I mean, that's amazing to be able to do that at the highest levels. And all those guys that you named, I mean, hell, Brandon Jones was really, versatile. He played nickel and played safety. PJ Locke came in as a corner, but played nickel and played safety. He was really versatile. All them guys that you're naming, that's one of the traits that I think Texas is actually going to get back to with DB development is versatility. Sark kept mentioning that term over and over again, describing the new DB class, versatility. Zay Baron can play any position in the secondary pretty much. So can Mukuba if they need him to. He started talking about Kobe Black as a three-position player. He talked about the versatility of all the guys he's bringing in. And I think, that I don't know if, I don't think that's a coincidence. I think they want to get back to that. And I think that was one of the keys to DBU being as unique, and I think having the longevity that Texas had for a while, pumping out DBs with the latest reinvention was because those guys were really versatile, man. Those DBs, and they went to the NFL and they proved that too. Even hell, the I mean, you go look at all the guys. Adrian Phillips was one of those guys that was really versatile. I mean, it just over the years, Aaron Williams was versatile. Kenny Vaccaro was versatile. I mean, versatility was probably the common denominator for all of us coming out. Nasty Nate was that. Quentin Jammer. I wouldn't even put myself in those guys' category, but I played nickel and played corner. But versatility was the key. And I think Texas has gotten to the point where they're almost too rigid in the roles that guys are playing in the secondary. We need to be more versatile. And I think that's the way they're going. It seems like to me, well, not just seeming, listening to Sark's words and also looking at the players in the secondary now, they do want to go more versatility, guys that can move around and play. Not that they have to play more positions, but that versatility, I think, ultimately makes you a better player in the secondary, no matter what your position is.
Yep, and in that versatility, like we saw a guy like Jahdae Barron's skill set be able to be used like that. But like if you look at how PJ Locke has stuck around, it's really been that way because it took like an injury to a guy like Stearns that they became so depleted at safety. He had been holding on to his roster spot at nickel, but then moved out to safety, and they were so happy with his production there that it sort of bumped out some of their other players and kept them from re-signing some of their better players. And another name to add just to that Denver Broncos, it sort of reminds me of the Titans back in the day, but Malcolm Roach, he just signed there, I don't know, like within the last hour with the Broncos. And then little Jordan Humphrey, like they traded Judy out of town. Little Jordan Humphrey, he's still with Sean Payton, and he's a guy that, I mean, it was two over 2% of his snaps were at tight end last year. He was like 63% in slot, 36% outside. So he's also a very adjustable guy, malleable to the formation and situation, and used in their, goal line packages. So yeah, Denver valuing all those Longhorns. But I mean, Malcolm Roach, if you look at his career and how he was used, he was an A gap guy, a B gap guy, and over the tackle. And that was something that when we talked about the Longhorns returning, Alfred Collins is one of those few guys that lines up everywhere on the D line. In Sevilla, when the way he was used in Arizona, he was one of the few guys across the country where you can see that lines up at all four spots on the D line. So that's just something that if you can have those pieces and move them around, it really helps not only to keep you from substituting and when you get stuck, on the field in a hurry up scenario, but also you can sort of change the chess pieces around and engineer the type of mismatches that can be advantageous to the defense.
It's fascinating. Rod, I'm just looking at the Malcolm Roach news on the Twitter machine, and Pro Football Focus had Malcolm Roach down one of the best, it says the best run stop rate in the NFL last season. I don't know how accurate that is, but I'm looking at this set among 142 defensive interior players with at least 100 run defense snaps. Malcolm Roach ranked 13th in run defense grade. It's interesting. We talk about a guy that at Texas was, I mean, remember when Todd Orlando tried to make him a middle linebacker and he was an edge guy and he kind of played everywhere. And now we're talking about him as somebody just signed him as a free agent because of his ability to stop the run. I mean, it's crazy how his body and skill set have really adapted well to give him some longevity in the NFL.
Yeah, and that versatility, it helps him out later on in the league, right? It makes him a better overall, well-rounded football player when it comes to versatility, because I think it helps him in terms of angles and leverage, and being able to bring certain other skill sets and traits to, you know, that he would use usually on the edge, but now he can use that quickness or that first step in the interior. I really do. I think that, you know, the more and more we get toward positionless football, which, you know, one day we'll be there. I think more and more you're going to need defenders who are versatile problem solvers, and that's what you know about guys who move around too. They got really high football IQ to be able to play more than one position. That also is something I think you need the closer you are to the football, and you know that's why I think, you know, Texas is going more toward that with versatility. Whether you're talking about guys you can move around like Anthony Hill and moving him around the front, or whether you're talking about even a guy like Ethan Burke, you can kind of move him and do different things with him up front, or you're talking about the secondary overall with different guys who you can kind of make movable chess pieces. And even if the formation or the personnel package would dictate what usually would be a matchup advantage for the offense, it's not, because you don't have necessarily liabilities. You have defenders who can match up as hybrids no matter what the offense presents to them.
What the other thing that I was going to bring up too, as far as free agency goes, getting away from kind of positionless football, but a guy that one of the more remarkable careers, I think, ever for a Longhorn in the NFL, mentioned him very briefly. Jordan Hicks signed a 2-year deal with the Browns. Now, he's from Cincinnati. I know it's a different part of Ohio, but he's going back to Ohio. If we're being honest, this might be Jordan Hicks' last contract he signs. But you talk about a guy that's had all the catastrophic injuries that he suffered. Not just in the NFL, but at Texas. Guys, this will be his 10th year in the league. For that guy to go through everything he went through physically, to not just leave Texas as an All-American and a top 100 pick, but you're telling me he's about to play his 10th season in the NFL? It's amazing that his career's gone as long as it has.
Yeah, I mean, some guys were just, I mean, they were going to play in the league anyway, right? He came in as a five-star guy. So he had an NFL ceiling no matter what. I mean, Bo Scaife was kind of like that, right? Bo Scaife had an NFL ceiling when he came and he walked on the 40 acres, dealt with some injuries. It's just amazing that those guys kept their ceiling as high as it was. They had that ultimate upside, and they kept that upside even through the injuries. Usually injuries will limit your upside, right? You end up capping a ceiling on that skill set because of the injuries. And maybe they did. That's the phenomenal thing, right? Maybe the injuries did limit him. And that's how good he actually could have been, and how good he actually, how much upside there was that the injuries did limit Bo Scaife, and they did limit Jordan Hicks, and yet still they had NFL upside, even with the limitations of the injuries. Now that is mind-blowing to think about how good they could have been.
Yeah, and Hicks is that type of guy that it's been pretty crazy because he's, like you said, Jeff, he's had those injuries at all different levels. And like, hell, even this year, halfway through the season, it looked like he was going down and going to be done with the Vikings. And he was having arguably his best season of his career. Like, you look at back when he was at Philly, when I think, yeah, it was that the Nick Foles team that won it all. And that was one of his best seasons where he fought through injuries. But like, coverage linebackers, like the way the league's evolved, and like we talked about how, you know, like PJ Tucker like had to wait for the NBA to evolve to him for him to come back around. Jordan Hicks is that type of guy that like the later and later into his career he's been, the league has just fit him so much better that he's a physical linebacker that also has this great coverage ability, and then just having that sense of being a football player and just all of his awareness and being able to play anywhere you put him in the backfield. Like, he used to be able to rush the passer even younger in his career, but you look at him just overall, he's one of those guys that, you know, linebackers are probably the least heralded of all the positions in football these days, but he's been a constant for about a decade, which is pretty crazy.
No, Rod, you played with maybe the best linebacker at Texas, not named Tommy Nobis. As a matter of fact, I don't think there's any probably about it. Derek Johnson is the best linebacker at Texas, not
Oh,
named
yeah.
Tommy Nobis. And you can make an argument that DJ is a better defensive player. I know it's two different, it's an apples to pomegranates comparison with errors, but I think you guys get what I'm saying. But, you know, Jordan Hicks, considering the career he had, he left as an All-American. He should be in that conversation somewhere. Maybe the thing that I think separates him, maybe the most just naturally instinctive guy at that position, like not the freak athlete Derek Johnson was, but just in terms of football IQ, natural feel for that linebacker position. Very few guys have come through here since in my lifetime following the program that have been just like God made certain people to be off-ball linebackers, and Jordan Hicks was one of them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I'm trying to think of who else, because it was a more of a natural linebacker like he was, because they don't come from the high school level anymore. Right now, all the linebackers are developmental projects, like Demarvion Overshown, or you know what I mean, like you're almost
Gets
transitioning
down or
guys.
you move, yeah.
Yeah, and they're these projects. You come in as athletes, and you're trying to mold them into being off-ball linebackers because of the spread offenses at the lower levels. So it's interesting. I mean, I think you're right about that, because even Derek Johnson, he was just such a freak athlete. I mean, honestly, you probably could have honestly played him at safety at some of the schools, and he still would have been fine. I mean, he was just that type of an impact force multiplier. Jordan Hicks had some great athleticism, but it was more about him just being a natural instinctual linebacker. And I think that's also why he's lasting the league so long. I think he's great at diagnosing plays. He's great in terms of his vision. He understands, like, his in terms of the diagnosis before the pre-snap and post-snap. He's really great at that, always has been. So 10th year in the league for him. I mean, yeah, I'm not surprised because of the upside physically, but like you said, the guy is a natural linebacker and always has been really good at being able to be a run fit. But like Matt says, he's also an asset in pass defense too, which most linebackers are a liability in one. He's not a liability in either.
Yeah, and that's where like that skill set being so, versatile, like you said about, the way linebackers end up where they're at. Like if you have too good of a skill, you go from being like a Micah Parsons to you're an edge rusher, or like that's sort of what you see in a guy like Anthony Hill. It's like, he may have this skill that may keep him from being that all the time. Or you're say, a safety that maybe bulks up or doesn't have the foot speed, but you understand how to fill an alley and all those things, and then you can go from being an average coverage guy to an above average coverage linebacker. So you grow into those positions. But like when you look at Jordan Hicks's positions that he's lined up in the NFL, it's pretty crazy. Like just the way he's been used in different spots. Like in that 2018 Eagles season, he was in the slot 107 snaps. He lined up in the D line 21 snaps, and then he was out at corner 12 snaps. Like he's a guy that can follow a running back. If you're going to go out there and you're in man to man, they're like, all right, yeah, we can trust him out there lining up at corner double digit times. But then this past year, he lined up on the D line 121 times. He hadn't lined up in the D line before last season, 2022, more than 21 times. And in the last 2 years, he's almost lined up 200 times. There were times he's had two seasons where he's lined up in the slot for over 100 snaps. Then he's lined up out at corner in double-digit snaps. He was lined up at safety his first 3 of his first 4 years. He was at safety like 30 times almost in a season. So it's a guy like that you can really fit a defense around him. And you sort of mentioned earlier, Rod, Makuba in passing. So I just pulled up where he's been throughout his career. And he's a guy also that every single season so far in his career, he's lined up at the D line, in the box, free safety, in slot, and at corner. Now, D line, he only had 9 snaps last year. Corner was 9. It was 16 the year before. It mostly in the slot last year, 315. But that goes down to 174 his freshman year when he was at safety the most, which was up around 300. Last year, free safety was only at like 150. And then he's in the box about 90 times last year. That seems to be about constant. He lines up there about 100 times per season. But to just see that you can line this guy up at 5 different positions across the field, and it doesn't matter. He can just follow around somebody. If he has a skill set that you need this guy on him, you don't have to worry. Or if you need to move him around and make it fit because you had injuries and you're depleted at this one position, now it can be that manufactured depth that we talk about and just the ability to adjust on the fly.
Good stuff.
You know, the the Jordan Hicks conversation brings me to what I wanted to talk about this week. I'm glad we got that segue because, Rod, I've given you credit for a lot of things in the time we've been doing this show. 2012 was the first season we did this show. And I remember Texas
Jordan
won.
Hicks was here.
Well, I'm
Yeah,
getting
nice.
that. Texas won that game at Ole Miss. And I remember everybody was excited, and I'm on the train, and we're talking about that game. And Rod, you were the first one, I think, maybe in the entire media market in Austin that stood up and said, this defense has a gigantic problem if Jordan Hicks isn't healthy. And because we saw it in the second half when Ole Miss started to move the ball and they started throwing it, and the Texas defense looked all discombobulated. You called it out, and sure enough, that was the beginning of the end for Manny Diaz, was the Jordan Hicks groin injury that year. And after that, we started having real conversations about the central nervous system of a defense, the spine of a defense, and pretty much any good Texas defense we've seen, any Texas defense worth their salt has been really strong up the middle. Any Texas defense we've seen that struggled has been weak up the middle, or there have been noticeable weaknesses up the middle. There's been a break in the chain somewhere. And that takes me to this defense. And I think this is the challenge for PK coming off of a year when you lose the best pair of defensive tackles in the country. You lose a guy that was a multiple year starter at linebacker. It's a year where the central nervous system of your defense might not be able to reset itself. But Andrew Bakuba, Matt, you just brought him up. He's one of the reasons why I'm a little more optimistic about this defense not falling off of a cliff than I would be if I just had PTSD and was going off, recent history. Makuba's one of those reasons. But you got Anthony Hill at the second level, and we'll see who ends up starting alongside him to be kind of that veteran presence. And you might lack depth, proven depth at defensive tackle, but at least you know what you got with Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton. At least you've got an idea of what they can give you. So, Rod, I'm concerned about it, but I don't worry about this thing just completely coming undone and this defense looking like the 2021 defense.
No, I thought about it too. I'm glad you brought it up because I've thought about it because the significant losses of what Byron Murphy brings to the table is the best pass rushing D tackle in the country, and then Tavondre Sweat is the best run stuffing D tackle in the country. I mean, that you can't get better than that. And then Jalen Ford behind them, who is a student of the game, right? The ultimate student of the game. This guy talked about being a chess master and trying to get into the mental aspect of the game. And he would sit down and talk with Malik Murphy about why quarterbacks made certain checks and audibles in practice and what was it trying to achieve and why they're trying to exploit the this defender on this RPO. I mean, he got deep into it, and I appreciate that. And they're gonna miss that. And I'm sure a young Anthony Hill is trying to do that, but he's still young and he's got a lot of ability too. And I think if they can find another linebacker that can stabilize that linebacking core, that's going to be big. And if they can find a zero technique, right? Somebody, and maybe it's Sidney Mitchell, who's what listed as 370 something now. What was he listed at? 372 or something?
372.
Yeah,
Damn.
I gotta see how that moves at 370. But yeah, I mean, if they find a zero technique and they can find another off-ball linebacker, and maybe that's Leon LaFau. I don't know who that is. Maybe that's Maurice Blackwell. I have no idea what the other linebacker is going to be. Those are your two big issues you got to figure out right now. Because I'm with you, safety. I think they're going to be great there. Nickel, Jadae Barron's going to be your nickel unless he wants to move out to corner, and then you got to figure out something else at nickel. But I think for right now, he's your nickel, so you're stabilized there. My concern would be, last year the pressure came from the interior in the pass rush. This year the hope is that you got your Trey Moores and you got Colin Simmons coming in and Ethan Burke now getting better and Barron Terrell, that the pressure will come from the edges. So I think you'll still get the pressure that you need. It'll just be different. I mean, I played when we lost Casey Hampton and Sean Rogers. Our defense just, it was still a good defense. It just looked different. It was built from the outside in. It was built from the secondary, the back end up. So our secondary and our back seven was our strength instead of our front seven like we had when we had, Casey Hampton and
That's a
Sean
great
Rogers
point,
and
Rod. That's such a
Dee
great point.
Lewis, right? In that group. So it was just different, but we still were a good defense. I think this defense is going to go through a similar transformation where they're going to be just, that's going to be their strength. Now, when you go up against power running football teams like Michigan, like Kentucky, like Georgia, how do you match? What is, because you're going to be a defense, I think, that's constructed and built with your strength as your back seven and the edges. That means teams right up. That's when they really challenge the how really how stout your central nervous system is. Can you hold up against power run game right at you? And some teams can't do both. Can Texas do both? Because I think in some of the biggest games of the season, they're going to have to stop both. Against Georgia, you're going to stop both. Against Michigan, depending on how the offense looks, you got to stop both. And against Kentucky, you want to stop both.
Yep, and that's where it was good when I sort of stumbled into the numbers to see. I would at least ease my mind on the pass rush issue that Texas may have from the interior when you saw that Alfred Collins, like last year, and he actually had more pass rush snaps than I thought he would have. I didn't think he had been out there for 218 in comparison to Byron Murphy's 273 and Tavondre Sweat's 309. Now, we did talk about, you know, the platooning aspect and how these guys were subbed in a lot, and it still impressed me that he was out there for that many snaps. It seemed as if it was maybe, you know, a tier below, not almost with his peers, but he ranked 11th in the entire country if you look at just true pass sets and his pass rush grade. And if you look, his pass rush win rate was at 13%, which is a really good one to have, and you couple that with Hill, like maybe you can get there with the pass rush. And you know, with the defense, stopping the run is more of a team thing than an individual thing. And now when you lose a guy like Sweat that eats up multiple blockers, it makes it a lot easier for the rest of the team. So your point about Sidir Mitchell's so big of one to see where he could end up being, but at least it's good to see that Texas has some guys that have performed at a really high rate when given the opportunity. And actually, it had a lot more opportunities than I had realized.
Rod, I'm so glad you made that correlation between, you know, the 2000 defense and 2001, because I think that's honestly maybe the closest thing I can think of, just kind of running through some defenses off the top of my head, a Texas defense that was good one year, then came back with another good year, in terms of just really changing the, I don't want to say structural integrity, that's taking it too far, but really changing kind of the identity of who you are, yet still being a really good defense. Like, I mean, you guys have, what was Maurice Gordon weighing, like 260 playing defensive tackle?
Yo, man, if that. Yeah, if that. He was light, man. He really was.
Yeah. It was like Tubbs and Maurice Gordon. I'm like, one of these things is not like the other.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, Maurice Gordon was lighter. But, yeah, I really dig I dig that comparison. I guess it kind of goes back to, you know, that old age-old conversation we've always had, right? Does better pressure lead to better coverage, or does better coverage lead to better pressure? And it's clear Texas needs both. And at the very least, why, another reason why I'm confident in PK, the pieces are there for him to have both. We've talked about it a lot, man. Malik Muhammad is kind of the kind of defensive back prospect they're going to recruit from now on, which, hey, you might have measurables, whatever. You've got to meet these minimum requirements. But at the end of the day, can you cover that guy across from you on a critical down and distance? And Malik Muhammad's the guy that can do that. Did it last year as a true freshman. Terrence Brooks has some of that ability. We just haven't seen him put it together yet. And with the pieces you've got up front, and not to mention what they can do with Anthony Hill as a situational pass rusher, I think you've got enough pass rush ability, maybe just kind of using different guys. You'll platoon some different guys in there. But, I mean, you brought Trey Moore and Colin Simmons in here for a reason. You didn't bring them in here to be gap control guys to help linebackers flow or whatever. You brought them in here to pin their ears back on third down, get after the quarterback. So, from a personnel standpoint, PK's in a much better place than – Manny Diaz was when it fell off, and where Vance Bedford was when it fell off, and where Todd Orlando was when it fell off.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, he's the one on a different trajectory, right? All those guys had their best years in their first years.
Yeah.
And then got progressively worse. PK got that out of the way his first year. He had his worst year in his first year, and he's gotten progressively better. So I think Longhorn fans are just satisfied with the kind of linear trajectory, the improvement of the defense. But there's no doubt the secondary is the, you know, it, right now they're kind of the black sheep of the Texas roster right now because they haven't really improved overall as a unit since Sark got here. D-line had their shining moment, right? The last 2 years, the D-line has been spectacular, especially in the interior. Still waiting for those edges, but I think now they're bringing in guys like, you know, Trey Moore through the transfer portal and bringing in Colin Simmons. Ethan Burke and Barron Cirilli get better. So I think the expectations that the edges this year will take that leap. But still, as a part of the entire defensive line itself, the defensive line has been one of the strengths of the team. Linebacker, you had guys drafted. You got basically now like a bit of a portal developing, right? You got the NFL now, you know, it seems to be they're paying attention to linebackers from Texas. And you want to have that type of, lifestyle, that type of culture in a room where, hey, guys are going to the league year after year. You got that with Marvin Overshawn, got that with Jalen Ford. Look at the offensive line. You've upgraded there. Offensive line should be in the conversation to win the Joe Moore Award this year. You look at the running backs. You've sent two to the combine in the last 2 years. Wide receiver, you're about to have two drafts in the first round. Tight end, everything. Quarterback. Every position has gotten progressively better since Sark got here, except the defensive backfield. You just haven't gotten better. I'm not going to say they haven't had their moments and flashes, but I don't know if you can say that group now has become a strength of the team. I don't think they've been a strength since Sark got here to Texas. So this is the year that they take the leap, supposedly. If they don't, I think, you know, you will see something change if that group is not a strength this year. With Makuba, with Jade Barron, you got the kind of athletes you want now at corner with Malik Muhammad coming in. Everybody likes Terrence Brooks and where he is. Derek Williams is now one of your guys you infuse in the secondary. There really is no excuse for that group not to be a strength. And if it's not, I think ultimately there will be some blame laid at the feet, probably of the coaches, the secondary coaches.
Yep, and that's sort of where, like, the names you brought up there, you could sort of see when this past year just stepping in and you could feel as if, man, I have my most confidence in, like, guys like Muhammad and Williams and almost anybody out there outside of Barron. And, like, Barron was a guy as a young player that immediately showed flashes and you could see, oh, man, he could be really good. And then whenever you have walking in the door and two freshmen, you're like, all right, I'm starting to like the guys that – this staff is identifying, recruiting, and then installing, and then you get to fill a stopgap maybe with a guy like Makuba, and then you have a few players like you had mentioned. You know, Brooks's development's been good, so we're finally getting those Sark guys that he was able to handpick and put into the situation, because it definitely, when you look back, whenever what he had inherited and where the DBs were, to where the young guys are now, I think there has been vast improvement. It's just they're young guys, and you got to see them actually grow into being what you expect, to where they can always go back to that DKR quote about potential. I mean, and you ain't worth much now, but it's like at least there was something so far what we've seen on the field. It was just we saw them in their infancy. If that can continue to develop the way that he's developed players across the roster during his time here, then it should end up panning out pretty good.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the way Sark and the, you know, with the help of the player personnel staff, the way they've managed the roster to give themselves numbers. And look, having access to the portal, that really helps when you're short. You need a defensive tackle body. They were able to go get one when Savea entered the portal. But, you know, Matt, kind of what you're talking about, that's where I'm at with the young defensive lineman, the interior defensive lineman. Like, between Jare Bledsoe, Aaron Bryant, Zach Swanson, Sadir Mitchell, since he's on campus right now, I'll throw Alex January in there. I mean, all you're really asking for is, hey, can you get two of those guys? If you can get two of those guys to play, to raise their level of play to where they can be rotational guys with Savea and Collins and Broughton, all right. Then once again, you're five deep. You have five guys you feel really good about on a given down at interior D-line. And are they going to have the down-to-down impact that Sweat and Murphy had? Probably not. But are they going to be just, you know, have the have be able to hold up like with the strength of wet toilet paper? Probably not either. They're probably gonna be able to hold their own most games. So that's kind of where I'm at. It's we've seen this staff, I'll use that word again, Rod, repurpose guys and kind of take what they had and figure, okay, what can we do with this guy? Well, we can develop this guy. This guy can be an every down player. Now it's you're taking your handpicked guys and saying, okay, how are we developing the guys that we looked at their traits as high school prospects? We looked at their traits as portal guys, and now we're going to try to turn them into frontline type guys. That's kind of the next step for this organization to take. I know I'm saying a lot and rambling a little bit, but it's time for the guys that they recruited, their handpicked guys, to step up and take on those roles that other guys have been in.
Oh yeah, because I mean, Sark and his staff have proven they can develop. They did that with the guys they inherited mostly, because we watched those guys right with other coaching staffs, and they did not achieve like they did with Sark. And so they've proven that they can develop the talent they have. Now the talent they brought in, which in a lot of people's beliefs and a lot of people's opinion have higher upside potentially than the guys they inherited. Now they need to kind of take it to the next level, and they got to fill those really, like you said, really important roles that a lot of the leadership, the main leadership, had for Texas last season. And that's what they really lost, that I think is going to be something that we won't learn about this spring. I mean, we can hear something about it, but you won't know until they're in the season. They have to deal with trials and tribulations, and who are the leaders on the team, and is their leadership effective? Because the leadership they've had the last 2 years has been really effective. Like Rojo being a leader, and Jay Witt, and JT Sanders being one of those guys, and Xavier Worthy being a leader on the team. I mean, those guys, that leadership was a really effective style of leadership, and it lets Texas have this really constructive culture that we won't know. That's what forms in the offseason. That's what they work on right now. And those guys who are willing to step up and lead by example in the spring, in the offseason workouts, and we don't know who that's going to be really right now.
Does it make you feel better though? I just want to get this out real quick, Matt. Sorry. When we talked about leadership under Tom Herman or Charlie Strong or even Mac Brown, we talked about a minute, the leadership, the identity of your team, it really reflects the head coach and kind of where he's at. If Sark really does have this healthy obsession, I mean, we spent a whole podcast talking about his healthy obsession with football, and then he came out like a week later and talked about he was borderline obsessed with winning a championship. I mean, if that's really how Sark is approaching this thing, do y'all almost feel like leadership, I don't want to say takes care of itself, but it's easier to foster leadership in that environment when that message is coming from the top down?
I mean, I think if it's passed down, if the lessons have been passed down from the previous team, from the previous leadership, I think it is easier if he's got to go there and build it and cultivate it himself again, because those lessons were not passed down, that culture wasn't passed down, which I'm not saying it wasn't. I think it is. But when you have that disconnect, then things are lost in translation, and then you got to go rebuild it again. And that takes time, that takes effort, that takes resources. And I think Sark said the beauty of it is he doesn't have to do that anymore. That
Yeah,
he
that's the
believes
main
that his
thing.
guys that are in those position roles, that they are passing down that culture, the lessons, how to work, what it takes, the commitment it takes, the time it takes, how to respect the game, respect your teammates, respect the locker room, all that stuff. And if it's being passed down, you're totally right. You don't even have to worry about that. It'll take care of itself. If it's not, then yeah, you as a coach, you need to address it. And you'll see it. You'll see it in spring if it's not organically developing.
Yeah, and that's where, like, almost if you don't see it, that's sort of a red flag that this group may not be what you want. But, like, that's why the idea of, like, hopefully you're recruiting the like-minded individuals, the players that you're identifying that have that, trait inside them, that within themselves, you don't have to worry about it. It becomes a peer accountability thing. And that when you get in the room, it isn't something that we're asking of you because you don't need it to be asked of you. It's something that sort of comes out of you and just naturally, grows within the room amongst the players because there's that peer accountability that you always hear almost every coach or every player talk about. Like, yeah, all the great teams are player-led teams because the players are the ones that have that fuel and that fire. And yeah, of course, you want a coach that can identify, you know, leadership and be able to push the buttons or do what's needed. But if a coach really has to, you know, tell players how to act in those ways and stuff, you may not have exactly the group that you thought you would wanted. So it's sort of an indicator of something bad if the coach has to interject himself more so than letting this, like, you know, organism grow within itself inside the, you know, locker room.
Rod, is this is the 2024 season, is it too strong to call it a referendum on Terry Joseph? Because we know PK is a front guy by nature. You know, he took his lumps year one here. Like you said, we've seen him get progressively better. And, you know, the personnel shouldn't be an issue in the secondary at this point. We know how key having that guy is on the back end that he trusts to tie both the front and the back together, because we go back to just how successful it worked for him at Washington when he had Jimmy Lake with him. Is that what it boils down to? Do you, I mean, is the personnel at that point where it's like, okay, if something's not wrong, then it's a referendum on that defensive pass game coordinator.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I do think, you know, just this year, they're finally getting around to addressing that defensive backfield. In terms of infusing it with talent, you can see the recruiting class full of DBs, and Makuba comes in a transfer portal. And they were looking, right, to add, was it Jabbar Muhammad, potentially, right? Yeah. They were looking for other pieces in that secondary. Unfortunately, I think because PK, this, you know, his time there with Jimmy Lake, you brought it up. Jimmy Lake's like coaching in the league now, I think, at this point. Mm-hmm. But when they were able to coordinate the pressure packages in the front with those coverages, I mean, they did an amazing job at it. And it really did confuse and discombobulate opposing offenses to the point where, you know, I thought it was one of my favorite defenses to follow even before I knew anything about PK coming to Texas. I was looking at that Washington defense, and it was known for having very creative ways of tying the front and the coverages together. And I think at times here at Texas, initially, remember, my big complaint was that there was no coordination, literally no coordination of the front and the pressure package. When he first got here, it was nonsensical. The coverages did not match up with what the front was doing in terms of the leverage and the coverage they were playing. And after Gary Patterson, it did. I think Gary Patterson came in and kind of gave them the cliff notes on the Big 12 and how you play defense in a modern Big 12. And I think that did help the defense. I think it helped PK too. They would have figured it out, but I think he would have figured it out, you know, maybe a couple of weeks into the season, or it may have taken him another season to figure it out. But I think he would have. And Gary Patterson said, no, man, I'll expedite that process for you. Gary Patterson leaves. You still haven't had the overall improvement from the secondary. I think that's a big part of why when Sark got his extension and he got his big raise, you know, all the coaches weren't extended, and the secondary coaches specifically, I don't believe were extended. I think Coach Sark might have left himself a little bit of flexibility just in case they don't necessarily take the leap that everybody, including myself, anticipates they will this year. Because this year, there's really no excuse for it. You've been in the system long enough. Strength and conditioning program is going really well. So that shouldn't be an issue in terms of them physically being able to play, you know, at a high level. It can't be mental. If it's mental, they've been in the system now for 3 years, then that would go back to the coaching. So I'm not going to say it's the mental aspect. They know the defense, and I think they know the alignment, the assignment, and their responsibilities and roles within the defense. And then we're just getting back to technique and fundamentals, and that's why they're getting beat. And that also, and leverage, and that would go back to the coaching, because if you're getting beat, if you don't know the leverage, you don't know the fundamentals and technique of the coverage you're playing, well, why not? You've been here long enough. That should be second nature to you. That should be muscle memory. And if that's not muscle memory, then it goes back to the way you're being taught, and you're not being taught properly. Yeah. So either way, yes, it's going to come back to the coaches. They know that, though. That's the name of the game.
Yeah, and that what you pointed out right there, though, is like really worth repeating, is that like you can have good young players develop, and say a guy like Muhammad and Williams, and then you see the growth from an individual like Barron. But like when the back end is not tied to the front, or the leverage is off, and these are things that like everyday like football fans can identify. But if the coach out there on the field is not doing it, like honestly, that's what Shanahan saw with his defense in the Super Bowl with Wilkes, and some of Wilkes's issues, and the back end wasn't tied to what the front end was doing and ended up making a change. And a lot of people were wondering, why did he get rid of, you know, they were the third best defense in the NFL. They had a great secondary throughout most of the year. It's like, yeah, but if there is a schism and there's a few things that you think should just be basic principles of our defense or something that we shouldn't have to go over again, yet we have that issue going on and we're this far into the season, or say this far into a tenure at Texas, and if something like that were to reoccur, then that would be something that would immediately get a guy out, even if, say, the development of the players is totally fine.
You know, we've seen the great defensive players, some of the best defensive players we've seen at Texas during the downturn, you know, the kind of 12 years of darkness, if you want to call it that. You know, it's amazing the guys that ended up going to the league. Like Chris Boyd, to me, is the best example of this. Like Chris Boyd's first 2 years, it was, what's wrong with Chris Boyd? What's wrong with Chris Boyd? Well, when did Chris Boyd finally settle down and start trending upward? When he had the same position coach for 2 years in a row and was in the same defense 2 years in a row. So it wasn't a matter of Chris Boyd's skill set. It's just once he finally understood what he was supposed to do, and he wasn't hearing 55 different messages, and the message was the same over a sustained amount of time, Chris Boyd turned out to be an NFL player. You know, yep. When did Joseph Osai really take off as a pass rusher? When he got in a scheme that didn't ask him to drop 30 yards in the middle of the field into coverage on third down. Like, it's that simple. So your personnel at this point, I feel like it's good enough to where the only thing coaching can really do, Rod, since they've been in the system this long, the only thing the coaching can really do is hold guys back at this point. I think you've got enough guys in that secondary that have NFL-like skill sets that coaching can only screw it up right now.
That's a great point, because that's why I think they should start just playing more bump and run coverage. That's why I think they want to take the thinking element out of it. I think they want to take a lot of the, you know, the pre-snap diagnosis out of it for these DBs. What they want is guys on the outside. And by the way, in the last three games of the season, even against Washington, they played more bump and run coverage on the field side and the boundary side than they played all season long. And I think because they did it against Washington too, I think ultimately they were doing it. That's where they want to be. I think they were just putting the guys out there. They believe they had enough reps of it in practice, that their fundamentals were pretty sound, that their technique was consistent enough. And at the end of the season, they were playing. And by the way, they had their best performances, arguably, in terms of pass defense, in that game versus Oklahoma State, in that game versus Texas Tech, not in the game versus Washington. They were going against elite NFL caliber guys, NFL quarterback, NFL O-line, NFL caliber guys in the wide receiving core. But I think ultimately that's where they want to be. They want corners that can play bump and run press coverage on the outside, the boundary side, and the field. They do it on the boundary side all the time. And then inside, they want versatile defenders in the back seven closest to the football, whether it be a safety or whether it be at off-ball linebacker. And I think they're getting more and more of that. And for Texas, they get to the point where they can redirect receivers and they can throw off timing on the outside with press coverage. The belief, at least from Sark's standpoint, I'm psychoanalyzing Sark, is that the quarterbacks hold on to the ball just a half a second longer. If they hold on to the ball, or have to go deep into their progressions, holding on to the ball, if that is the case, then we'll get home, because they've watched enough film to go, damn, we are so close on a lot of these pressures to turning them and converting them into sacks, or turning them into splash plays where we can, you know, force a fumble or get a sack fumble or get a tackle for loss. And yet Texas oftentimes can't convert those pressures into those splash plays. So the belief is we play more bump and run on the outside, quarterbacks have to hold on to the ball, and then boom, we can get some more of those plays, convert pressure to the sacks, or the bump and run coverage will make the windows smaller and tighter for quarterbacks, and they'll still try to make those throws, but they'll be throwing them through, you know, really tight windows, and they'll still have that pressure on them, and that pressure will force quarterbacks to operate from a really congested pocket, which usually means that accuracy is going to be off. Accuracy off into tight window throws usually means hands on the football, hands on the football usually means turnovers. And I think that's the thought process they're trying to get to. That's a, you can say that's a leap, but that's, I think, what Texas is trying to get to. More turnovers, more takeaways, more splash plays, and the pressure is supposed to get you there, but the pressure hasn't really, for the last 2 years for Texas, it hasn't correlated into more of those.
Yeah, and that's where, like, Texas maybe getting to that point where they're afforded that luxury because, you know, a lot of times people will be like, well, why don't you just man up and play man? It's like, well, not every team can do that. But if Texas has finally recruited the players that you can have the confidence to do that, it's why you have, say, scheme. What does scheme do? Well, scheme elevates lesser talent so they can perform at a sum that's greater than the whole parts when you add them all together. So whenever you have inferior talent, but you plug it into some type of scheme, like something revolutionary like Leach did with, you know, the spread initially, or you start playing the math game with different RPOs or zone read and trying to bring a mobile quarterback, things that change the math. Those things can elevate you if you are lesser in talent. But if you have to get to the point that you have the talent to man up, then you change the math back on the offense and you get to the point that we put a hat on a hat. That means that our extra hat has a hat on the ball, and that means that we aren't going to be as vulnerable to, say, an RPO or a zone read or a mobile quarterback. And now that we can identify this, we can bring the pressure to exploit this situation or this area. We can be physical to let, you know, the passing, modern passing game not be able to be on time whenever it's so much of a precision or timing offense, or we can overload one side of the line if they have a weakness to get to the quarterback. Like, you can then dictate the terms if you are afforded the luxury because your talent is so good to play man. It's just there are very few of those teams, and it's why teams like Georgia or Alabama can dominate for years when you get to that point. It's just very few teams can get to that point. And like at the NFL level, you have to be so great at identifying the talent that, yeah, Belichick played man more than anybody because he was able to get the guys that he could go identify and get those diamonds in the rough that can fit within a salary cap. In college, you can actually recruit, and if you hit on those guys, you can do it pretty quickly. And that's why you always hear, like, that's why you want to be at a school like Texas or at a school like Alabama, because those are the few places where you can do those things over and over and over.
You know, I remember I got my first taste of Rod, I know you said it, and I'm a firm believer in it now, but you went on defense with players. And I got my first taste of that, really, if I think about it, when I was in high school. And I played 1 year in high school where I swear we changed schemes offensively and defensively like every other game. It was the most, like, just wheels off thing you've ever experienced in football. I remember 1 week. My buddy reminded me of this a couple weeks ago. We were talking about it. I'd totally forgotten about it. But 1 week we were playing a team that ran a 3-3 stack defense. And Matt, you'll have to bleep this, but I need to cuss for effect. And we were told game plan for that week. He goes, "Hey, teams with no talent, that's who runs a 3-3 stack." And we lost the game. We come in the following Monday and we're changing our defensive scheme to a 3-3 stack. And I was like, huh, I wonder what that says about us if we're running a 3-3 stack all of a sudden. So it's like, yeah, sometimes you got to overcompensate when you don't have talent. I'd heard, you know, this was back during the Manny Diaz time, I heard from an NFL source that, man, if Texas is recruiting the type of guys that they should, if they're doing it the right way, they shouldn't need an elaborate scheme. They should just keep it simple and let their playmakers go make plays. You know, the classic example to me, really two of them. I think one of the reasons why Sark has had so much success was on his way to having success in 22 against that Nick Saban defense and did last year is, man, when you recruit the type of athletes he does, you know what you're getting from a Nick Saban defense. It hasn't changed in 10 years. It's still going to be pretty much the same. He's tweaked it a little bit, but it's still the same. His are better than yours, and his are going to go win. It's just like when you play LSU. You know LSU, when they've got it right, they're going to play man coverage, what, 90% of the time?
Yeah.
Just because they think theirs are better than yours. So, and I think that goes back to what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, is defensive evolution in the SEC probably has been a little bit slower to come along, because it really hasn't needed to come along, because you got access to the best talent you can. So and Rod, you know, I think when people talk about playing man, or and Matt, you broke it down there a second ago. Yeah, you're gonna if your personnel is good enough, again, going back to the Chris Boyd thing, man, you're gonna give up some plays, and people might not think you're very good, but you're gonna make your share too. You know, Rod, you go back to early in your career, probably like your sophomore year when you were starting at corner opposite Quentin Jammer. You knew teams were gonna pick on you because there ain't no way in hell they're gonna throw at Quentin Jammer. And you know, you had, I think, the right mentality. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but hey. You might give one up here or there, but that's okay. You're going to be in a position to make a couple more before this thing is over.
Yeah.
So that's just the nature of the beast. But the coaches trust you that much that, hey, we believe in you. You're good enough. You might give up one or two, but you're going to have a chance to make a couple of those that are going to help us win this game.
Yeah, and I think, and obviously you base that on, complementary football, right? Depending on how the offense is playing. But if that offense is as explosive as we think it is, you defensively, you should be aggressive. I mean, theoretically, that offense, now, unless your red zone offense is bad again and you're 120th in the country in touchdown percentage in the red zone, which I don't think they will be, but if they are, then yeah, somebody's got to answer for that. But that offense is as explosive as we think it's going to be. You can take some chances on defense. And I would like to see them be more aggressive on the outside. I like to see them blitz a little bit more. I mean, why not? I mean, I think it's blitz up the interior gaps, or Anthony Hill off the edge. I like to see them blitz more, just because I think you have the athletes that can overwhelm teams, and you want to do that before teams start sitting back and just trying to play power football against you. I think that's the one thing you may be able to exploit against this team. It's just, can you, if you can play power football against them, can Texas hold up? Do they have the bodies to hold up against a power football team?
Yeah, that you know, I go back to the Alabama game in 22 when PK they blitzed the hell out of Bryce Young. I mean, PK hadn't been a real
They
good
did.
guy. What were they like 37, 36% blitz rate in
Yeah,
that
they
game?
got after him.
And I remember talking to Jalen Ford after the game, and he said, and DeMarvin Overshown said the same thing. They're like, yes, we're telling PK, send us, like, we want to blitz. When you talk about being an aggressive defense, hell, Rod, that should be why guys want to play defense out of Texas or an LSU at an Alabama. You recruited me because you believed I was one of the best players in the country. Put me in a scheme that's going to cut me loose and allow me to show you that I'm one of the best players in the country.
Agreed. That's exactly right. I
Guys
agree.
crave that, man.
They do. They guys want to be aggressive. They want you to unleash them on certain downs. And I think, I think Texas has the athletes now, where especially coming off the edge now, and you got a lot of versatility now. This is probably the ideal defense Texas has to blitz a little bit more.
Yeah. Rod, I'm gonna call it now as we wrap this up. The newcomers got their jersey numbers.
Uh-oh.
We'll see if he sticks with it. But Xavier Filsom, he got 21.
Hey, young buck, that's what I'm talking about,
So
baby.
this could be it, Rod. This could be the time where somebody makes a run at the crown.
It could be. I mean, chances are a young buck's probably gonna change to a single digit as soon as he gets a chance. I don't know, I gotta check out all the single digits taken. Definitely the one that he wants is taken, I guarantee you. He's probably gonna change later on. They all do now. They don't think 21 is cool as it used to be for some
So,
reason.
Rod,
It's weird. It would look so cool when Dion was 21, but you're right. With all the single digit numbers, there used to be rules to numbers, and I think that's what made 21 look so cool. But now, since they changed all the rules to numbers, it isn't nearly as bad as it used to be.
Yeah, that's true. Good
Rod,
point.
Rod's greatness is number 21. It might be like Rod, that guy that rushed for 1,800 yards one time. Like, no running back's gonna get that many carries, so your rushing record is safe. Guys want to change numbers all the time. He might wear 21 for a year or two and then change. So
No,
your
you're right.
crown might be safe just because of the way the game is
Bro,
now.
I think you're right about that, honestly, because everybody changes from it, or they're cursed and unfortunately end up getting hurt or something. I'm hoping that's not happening to the young man. But that 2-1, I never expected to be the greatest number 21 in Texas football history, still to this day. No way. I was like, somebody's gonna wear that 2-1. But every time somebody either gives it up, or they decide, that, or that player doesn't reach expectations.
Now, as the last people to hold it through, Gideon kept it his whole career, and then did Duke Thomas? I thought he changed his number by the end of it.
I
No,
think you're right.
Duke kept
Did he?
21 the whole way.
He kept
Okay.
it. So those are like the last two, I think, that kept it all the way through.
Yeah.
No.
Jordan Whittington had it and then changed.
Yeah,
no, there's been a
had
lot
it.
of
Everybody
change.
thought Troy Murray was going to be the next coming. Yeah, I remember that, man. I remember.
Kyle Porter had it.
Then Keaton Crawford.
Keaton Crawford had it. That's
hey, the best gunner in college football. There you go.
That's not an insult.
That's the truth.
That's in the spirit of your football career, Rod. That's what you were a good gunner in your day in the NFL.
I was actually, if I could claim to be really good at something in the league, I was actually really good as a gunner. I was really good at it.
Amen.
And that's something true, and I'm not exaggerating. Pete Thamel was reporting all season long that NFL scouts everywhere are salivating over Keaton Crawford as a gunner. So let's see if that turns into anything.
Getting drafted puts you in the top 1% of 1%. If you can sustain any kind of career, I don't give a rat's ass how you do it. As long as
if you get to the NFL, that's a hell of an amazing accomplishment.
You found a skill to help you fit in. Gee, that's more than, 99% of the rest of the football world.
Same with the college scholarship is like the top 1% of the top 1%.
Yeah, that's why we love doing the show with you, Rod, because one of the three of us had to have something notable happen on the field for this show to last as long as we
so, yep.
Damn sure wasn't me.
Neither were me.
All right. That's probably a good place to end it. Hey, when we record next week, it'll be the start of spring practice.
Nice.
We get into it. And hopefully we've set the groundwork. You can get over to Horns 24/7. I know Rod's got stuff going on with the On Texas Football YouTube channel. Also a show at the Horn. Everything I'm doing at Texas Sports Unfiltered. Plenty of ways to get previews for spring practice, including on the website. We got our position inventory series that we're running down, our countdown to spring football. But hopefully we gave you kind of the little bit of insight, little scheme type stuff to keep an eye on as we get started for spring football. And I'm ready, man. I'm ready for spring ball to get here. Let's do it next week. Until then, though, Matt, thanks for everything, man.
You're more than welcome.
Rod, we appreciate the time and the knowledge.
Anytime, brother, anytime.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
For Matt, for Rod, for everybody at 24/7 Sports, the 24/7 Sports Podcast Network, and the Horns 24/7 Podcast feed, where you get each and every episode of Longhorn Blitz. Just search Horns 24/7, Horns 247, no dashes, slashes, or spaces. Anywhere you get your podcast, click that follow button when the feed pops up. Get every episode of the Blitz when it drops on Wednesday. And thanks to Matt, get all of our archives, our classic interviews and shows are available on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page.
Yep, just type in Longhorn Blitz.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
For the Horns 24/7 family, for the Longhorn Blitz family, I'm Jeff Howe. Thank you so much for downloading and listening, and we will catch you again on the next episode.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has three episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts, So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.